Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, so welcome back. This will be the final session of this great workshop. There will be two talks for the session and a coffee break between those. And our first speaker for the session is Josef Berner.
Okay, thank you for inviting me to this again, to this meeting of mental files experts. And I will tell you about our vanished jar experiment. And I changed the title slightly to Strawson's constraint at work, because I think that's the important message for mental files of our experiment. Okay, let me get that. So the overview is, I'll tell you quickly what is meant by Strawson's constraint, then how that relates to identity statements, understanding identity statements, then a developmental claim that indexed files are developed around 3 to 5 years, or roughly 4 years plus minus, and that sentences and a false belief test mastered at that particular time, and both of them are indexed files that provide sort of the essential evidence for that claim. So then a question has been around that people thought this is sort of strange that children have problems with understanding simple identity statements at such a late age. Therefore, there must be a way of doing something that one can show that they can process identity information earlier. Then the answer to this, I tell you right away, is not that interesting, that at least in our vanished jar experiment, the task is no easier. If anything, it's more difficult. But the experiment showed some interesting response patterns, and they are important for a Strawson's constraint. And then at the end, because Strawson's constraint looks like mutual exclusivity of files, that I wanted to explore a little bit what that means for mutual exclusivity as it is known sort of in the literature. So Strawson's constraint was not named by Strawson, but by Recanati, because Strawson pointed out, or in his system, the files correspond to objects in a one-to-one manner. So that means coreferential files can only exist in error. And upon detecting the error, the files must be merged into a single one. If you don't do this, then you are subject to a numerical confusion, because you think there are two objects out there when there is only one. Okay? So coreferential files are supposed to be avoided. And the system therefore ought to have some means to show an aversion to deploy a new file for an object that is already tracking by a file, is already tracked by a file. But this then, sticking to Strawson's constraint, creates a problem for perspective taking. Why? Because how are perspectives treated in mental files? Each file that one has of an object presents its referent in a certain way. Philosophers call it the mode of presentation, but I think one could say that's what we mean by perspective. Which, by the way, gives you a standard definition of perspective, which you can apply to different fields, to linguist perspective as the linguists use it, and also how we are familiar with it from visual perception and others. So if each file presents a object in a certain under a certain perspective, then co-referential files present different perspectives of the same object. And that is needed for perspective taking. But that's a problem, is prevented by Strauss's constraint, okay? So the solution then is to have it both ways, is you stipulate two types of file. There are regular files, they are subject to Strauss's constraint. And then indexed files, they can be co-referential. That sort of interferes with my bottom line, but I hope you can still decipher it. So that means that makes perspective taking possible. And one of the standard, much investigated cases of different of understanding that people can have a different perspective is the false belief test, or ascribing a false belief. For those who don't know that, here a minimal description of the typical experiment. So you have a story with two boxes, a blue and a green, and then you have a character pop up, Max, in the original story, and he has a chocolate bar. He puts his chocolate bar in the blue box. So in order to track his perspective, you need two types of files. You have a regular file, that's sort of the yellowish file, that tracks the chocolate. I also have this label, which is something that came up yesterday frequently, that is supposed to provide a pointer to the concept of chocolate, which is under which description you see you consider this object. And here you have the predicative information that it is being put in the that it is now in the blue box, but you also have then a second co-referential file. Again, is should track the chocolate. And that's has the information that Max has about the chocolate. So that means it's indexed to Max. It represents his perspective on that object. It's the computer distorts my lovely. then Max goes out. Somebody comes and transfers the chocolate in his absence to the green box. So you, of course, update your regular file that now the chocolate is in the green box. Then Max comes back. But being indexed to Max, there must be information in the system that you only should change what happens to the chocolate if Max has some informational access, and if he is away, he doesn't have that. Therefore, his file stays unchanged, and Max comes back, and then your file says that the chocolate is in the green box, but his file, the file indexed to him, still has the old information in it. And then when asked where he will look, then you have to use, the question is where should he go to pick up his chocolate? Then you shouldn't use your own file to answer the question, but to use the file index to him to answer the question. And if you use that, then if it's in his view in the blue box, then you ought to go to the blue box. And that enables you to give the right answer. And that requires using those indexed files. And indexed files don't have a direct referent. That's why they need to be linked to regular files. That means that this file inherits the referent, namely this piece, this chocolate bar here from the regular file. Okay, now what about So one of the important findings is that children's ability to answer the false belief test correctly is comes at the same time as their ability to process identity information. So identity information or identity statements become relevant when the normal information processing procedures lead you into thinking that there are two different objects or people, so that you entertain two regular files for the same person. So if you get a story and I start the story with the teacher is at school, Susie's mother is not at home. Susie wants to bring something to her. And then, that means normal processing. The teacher makes you deploy one file. Sorry, this is all mucked up. So the teacher is supposed to make you deploy a file for the teacher, and this is says that this person is a teacher and she or he is in school. If you send a second sentence, Susie's mother lets you deploy a second file for Susie's mom, and we know that she is not at home and she is Susie's mother, and so on. Okay, and then you're given an identity statement that Susie's mother is the same person as the teacher. Okay? And then children are asked, where should Susie go to find her mother, for instance? So that would allow you to know that Susie should go to the school. And also, in order to obey Strawson's constraint, you should deploy a new file, a single file for that person, and merge the information that's in those both files into this new single file, so that this person is a teacher, and she is the mother of Susie, and she is in school. And then you can answer the question where Susie should go to meet her mother. Okay, and it turns out that... this is one thing that you just merge this in order to obey Strawson's constraint. But if you want to keep your earlier... your earlier perspective on this scene, then you can also deploy copies of the original regular files as indexed files. As for Susie's mom, it has the same information as this one, but it's now indexed to me T1 means myself at the earlier point in time when I thought that those were different people. And the same on the other side, you can have a second indexed file, again indexed to your earlier perspective, that is a copy of the original regular teacher file. Okay, so now you still have the different perspectives, but you're not numerically confused, because only regular files make you think of an external object. Okay? I think that's... Now, my claim would be that you need... that simple merging is possible, but if that happens, you would not be really able to understand the meaning of the identity statement. And this I try to illustrate here. So if you just merge, then you have now, call it Susie's mom, or give it another label. She's a teacher, mother of Susie, and in school. And now you are given the identity statement. What does that mean? So Zeus is mother. You look for a given given regular file that relates to Zeus's mother. Now this one here says that this person is the mother of Susie. So that would be your only sensible existing referent. And the teacher is also, she is a teacher. So if there are no other teachers around that have been mentioned, then you would also make this refer or be associated with this person. And then what you get is a sort of a redundant tautological result that Zeus's mother, this person is identical with this person. Okay, and that is exactly what Frege's point about identity statements. If the meaning of the terms are only the referent and not what he then called a senses. So that's why the indexed files also play a similar, or the role that is needed in order to make sense of the statement. So if you keep both, deploy a new file and merge the information into that new file, but also keep copies of the original files, but now as indexed files, then you can understand the identity statements, because Zeus's mother now can be associated with this file and makes you think of one person, and the teacher with that file, and then you think of that person, and you can understand the statement as telling you that the people you think of here is actually only the same person. So yesterday I thought that this could, if we go back, this could be an interpretation of what Gabor meant, that the discourse reference, that would be those files that emerge from the discourse, have to be kept when an identity statement is given. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to understand the identity statement. So I don't know whether that would be analogous. Okay, so the claim is that children, when they are able to answer the or pass this test, they need to be not just able to merge to the information in two files into one, but also deploy indexed files in order to really understand the identity statements. Okay, and here is sort of a meta-analysis of various experiments I could find that tested children's understanding of false belief, and the green stuff is the average at each age group in particular study, the average number of correct responses in those studies. And as you can see, the average correct number of correct responses goes up fairly closely following this line between 3 and 5 years. With, of course, as is you always have in psychology, a sort of band of variance. Okay, but it is roughly this inner one is about a half a year on each side. Okay, and this is a fairly consistent picture. And if you look at all the other theory of mind tests, of which there are many, they always stay within that band. Okay? And the important thing here is also the success rate for identity statements also stays within that band, so develops very closely in step with the theory of with the false belief understanding. And not only that, but also For those studies that use both, they are shown here, they also correlate quite substantially, and even when you partial out age, a decent correlation remains. So that is an extra, so there are two signs that those two tasks develop together or have some common component that allows passing those tests, because they the correctness, the success rate goes up, closely linked, and they correlate. Okay. So, as I said, the then intuition was okay, maybe, but does this late development and this link to the false belief test depend basically on having to understand identity statements? Could we do without them? And so we tried, it was a longer enterprise. I think we have been various collaborators we had, started with Mike Tomasello, we wanted a test for apes. And then in the end, we ended up collaborating with Hannes Rakoczy and his lab. And out of this, various attempts to find a good task, we came up with this that is at least feasible for young children, if not apes yet. So how it works is you have a box here and two toys and a jar that stands in the back. It's not used in this experiment, really. It's just standing in the back, called the distractor. And then the task is, so we have to clean up here. So in order to stash away the teddy, we take a jar that happens to look more or less identical to the one back there and put the teddy into this jar. Then we put the jar back into the box, and as you can see, the box seems to have two compartments. We put it into the right compartment. And then at this point, children are asked, where is the teddy now? Just to check they followed the procedure so far. And they all say, it's in here. Then you say, take out this again, a third jar that looks exactly the same. Take it out, put in the car, put the car inside. And then you have this situation here. And you ask, where is teddy again? So then, not all, but most adults and children say it's still in this box, okay? And then you open the box and you see two things. There is no jar with teddy. Also, the box doesn't really have two compartments, it's just one big compartment. And adults immediately realize that means that the jar that was put in here was taken out just from the other side of that box. Okay, that this was just in error, that you thought it was came from a separated compartment. And now the question, the data are, this is again messed up. Well, I can still, am I getting too far away? It's okay. This is what we did. So we had the jar back there, the distractor. We had this jar here, that's a target jar with a teddy. But it had been a label, mental file has been attached to it that saying that it is it has the car inside, okay? And then you discover that the jar with the teddy, which you thought was in here, had disappeared. So you have to figure out which of those jars that look like the jar you're looking for is the jar you're looking for. And for adults, it's clear it must be this one, because this one, for physical reasons, couldn't be it. But this one already has a label attached to it, and the one you're looking for also has a label, has a file attached to it, namely that it has the teddy, saying that it has the teddy inside. Now, Strawson's constraint forbids you to apply this or attach this file here to the same object that already has this other file on it. Okay? So that can so this is a problem. What do children do? Well, what might they do? They could look under the table where this jar is that they are looking for. But even more interesting, only 12% picked this jar here, but 74% claimed that the teddy was in that jar back there. So children, when looking for a jar that's missing, then you look for a jar that's around, and there are two possible candidates, but this one is you're barred from using because it has a file attached to it, so they opt for this one. Okay? And then we manipulated this a little bit further, in that what happens if you don't use a distractor jar, then something similar, not quite, now you get somewhat more, 39% who pick this one, because now you don't have a choice. Now they still think that must be one of the visible jars that is it, but 61, still the majority, then says it's has disappeared, don't know where it is, and you get some very, on the videos you can see quite a few children who sort of look under the table where it had gone and so on. So they really have a problem linking this, the missing jar with that label, with this other jar. Okay, you can also now do another manipulation. You also put something into this back jar there. Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of, in order to use the pointer, it's difficult. you can put something else into there, a horse or something. And that, of course, ensures that a file will be deployed for that object here in order to register that the horse is inside. And then when looking for the jar with Teddy, you have two candidates, but both of them you can't use because of Strawson's constraint. So therefore, again, it got mucked up here. So I think 53% now look under the table, look somewhere or say it has gone, don't know where it is, and so on. So really a very strong effect that the younger children can't solve this identity problem because of Strawson's constraint. The idea, okay, and we didn't contrast it directly, but we used in the third study also a false belief test. And as you can see, the false belief test with this children falls again into this beam here, like every other false belief data. But the correct answers to the jar, they are much, much more difficult, right? Whereas you have seen when identity statements were given, then the identity tasks also stayed within that bar, okay? So this is some indirect evidence that this non-linguistic evidence for what's identical with what is if anything much more difficult than understanding identity statements. Okay, but the really and there is no link to whether they pass or fail false belief. there just isn't any reliable correlation here. So why is the tasks with identity statements, why are they easier than without? In some ways, that's not really, when you think about it, not surprising, because with the identity statement gives you direct information what is identical with what. Whereas here, the children have to look for the identity themselves and not really directed with it. But in any case, it's not the understanding the identity statement that is the crucial difficulty. Okay, so the intermediate summary here: children look when they in this task for where they can see the vanished jar. Visual candidates, so those visual impressions, visual candidates that already have a file attached, they are shunned. That's Strawson constraint. So in E1, we therefore observed that a minimal correct choices, almost all choose the distractor because it looks like the vanished jar and doesn't have a file attached to it. In an experiment 2 and 3, there were no unfiled candidates. So, but still less than 50% choose a jar with a file attached. 39% do this in experiment 2 and 47 in experiment 3, but below 50%. And more than half, over 50%, look under the table or use some strategy like that. For them, the jar has disappeared. And the choice of a filed jar has no relation with the false belief test, which is our index for the ability to deploy indexed files. So even though children, by all the previous evidence, should be those that pass the false belief test should be able to deploy indexed files, but for some reason they don't do it. It doesn't come natural to them. So identity statements are no hindrance, actually may help. That's what this shows. So if you want to read up on it again, I put this experiment in my book that was published recently. I can offer you a 30% discount if you use this thing here at this internet. But if you're really interested, send me an email and I can send you the chapters. But I only have electronically individual chapters. Okay, that is the most important message here. But now the interesting further. 10 minutes, okay, that works, lovely. Should work, okay. So you can see from the results that Strawson's constraint creates a real mutual exclusivity among files, right? Either one file can be used for this object or another file, but not both. Instead of files, if you think of verbal labels, then that is what's known as the mutual exclusivity experiment data that Gabor yesterday already described. So I go over quickly. There are one of the standard experimental procedures is that you have a familiar object and one, at least for children, rather unfamiliar object, and you ask the child to give Percy the and the nonsense word, the fendel. Okay? And you typically find that 80% of children, also adults, by the way, hand you the whisk and not the banana. And then this has been used, it's always worth mentioning, for two, maybe more, sort of important claims. that the first one was that it is provides children with a word learning heuristic to help them latch more quickly onto the correct referent for a new term. Okay, that is one. So that is, but it this constraint works blindly. Okay, no information is given what the speaker wants you to give him. It's just you have this blind thing that each object can only have one name. One of the more popular alternative explanation is that children understand early on communicative intention. So if the speaker wanted me to hand him hand Percy the banana, he would have said banana. Since he didn't do that, must be the other object. Okay. So from my point of view, this what is not so nice about those explanations is that here this lexical constraint is a sort of blind constraint. Here, the communicative intention isn't blind, but poses rather sophisticated reasoning about communicative intention from very early on. I'm more in favor of a sort of minimalist assumptions. And the third thing, which is down here, is Gabor's theory, and it has been cut off here. And here the experiment. So the claim is what the earlier studies didn't do is they didn't distinguish, they just used different words, but didn't distinguish between the prosody in which this word is used. And prosody in this experiment manipulates focus. So if he says, the fox says, I am pointing to the dax, teaching the child that this is called a dax, and then says, now you point to the, and then either putting stress on work or no stress on work. And that manipulates focus, and if it's put in focus, the blue thing, and that means you should think of something different, not the one that we already were thinking of, so then it would be this one, and that creates the the mutual exclusivity data. Whereas if you say, now you point to the work, then that means you. I pointed to this here, and now you point to the work. You point to the same one, but it's you though, instead of me. Okay, and you get this really nice data that in the blue condition they point to the other one, other object. In the given condition, the red one, they only very few children do that. Okay. So I have liked those data, and the analysis, but there is something missing. I hope you can reconstruct that slide. So focus. If I looked up in one of the linguistic papers that Gabor has cited. The focus is one of the constraints operating at the interface between syntax and interpretation. Okay, so but in order to do the task, we have not only syntax or the word level and the interpretation, the mind, but also the real objects in order to know how to act. Okay. And now, to make it short, if I say, how does it work with mental files? So if you say, this is a DAX, then you create a mental file for that object. You have some information on what it looks like, and that it is called a DAX. Okay? And if you're now in the second statement, a given work, without emphasis, then it signals that you should give an object that has already been given in the context. So therefore, it makes you pick the or associate work with the same mental file. And then that, of course, means in terms of so mental file captures the interpretation of what is being said, but mental files also have some rules of how they relate to external objects, right? And this, of course, has visual information which object it is, so they point to the to this object here. But now, if you put emphasis on work, so that puts it on focus, so that means it's not an existing mental file, but you should deploy a new mental file. Okay, fair enough. But now you have a problem which object to point to, because you don't know which object is the referent of that new mental file. Right? So you could be this object, but wait a moment, here Strawson's constraint is very helpful, because that already has a file attached to it, so therefore I can't use this one. This was the other sort of relevant object around. This doesn't have a file attached, so therefore it that ought to be the referent. Okay? So I think Gabor's analysis is fine, except in the case where there is a focus put on it, you also need Strawson's constraint to get a really strong mutual exclusivity effect. Okay? So take home messages from our experiment and this analysis. So Strawson's is a strong constraint on regular files. It makes children accept magic, and it's at the heart of mutual exclusivity, at least part of the explanation. Okay, thank you. Doesn't I can't hear you.
Thank you for the talk. I had a clarification question about the vanished jar task.
Yeah.
I was wondering what the role of the separator in the box was, just given the results with the destructor jar. I'm just having trouble understanding why they would have to be led into believing that the box is separated into parts.
Yeah.
And what you would expect if you didn't have this incentive in the task. If there were no separator.
Well, the general procedure, like with the verbal tasks, is you need to give some information which by normal processing leads you to think of two different objects. So with the language you use different names, and that typically is interpreted as a teacher and Susie's mother, you think of two people. And then you have to give identity information to correct that error, if you wish. Okay, and here the seeming separator is the visual way of trapping people into assuming it must be a new object. Because if they put the jar into this side and then take a jar out from the other side, then that can't be the same jar. And when you then see that there is no separator, it's just one bigger room in there, then trying to figure out which jar that we now see could be the missing jar, then at least adults immediately get the idea, well, it's the one I took. I put one into the box and took one out of the box. Ah, that must be the same jar.
Thank you. I first wanted to push back a tiny bit on the idea that we both need focus and an extra constraint on top of this. So I think under the focus analysis, the sentence literally says that you have to find a salient alternative and exclude it. It doesn't just say you have to find something new or that you have to open a new file. It says find, well, like if you say not the blick, say now you point to the blicket, it's part of the literal meaning, so to speak, that not something else that was salient, right? And the something else is WAG in this case. So I think I have no, I'm absolutely on board on what happens with the mental files in your analysis in that case, but I don't think that beyond focus's effect to provide alternative statement, alternative utterances that are excluded, you also need a constraint to explain the inference. The other thing I wanted to ask, which is more general, is that it feels to me that in a lot of the cases, the predictions kind of depend how exactly you do the filing. So for the Vanish jar, you file by jars. But it's really not how you filed when you introduced the framework. You filed by the objects that are hidden in boxes. And I feel like depending on what are the file names and what are the predicates that can go in the files, we can really make very different predictions, right? So for instance, we could make beliefs happen by saying that we can make the false belief work by saying that of this object, someone believes that it's in the blue box, but actually it's in the red box or something like that.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much freedom of setting up the files any way possible makes it sort of makes the framework able to capture basically any phenomenon based, like where individuation happens.
So first to your mutual exclusivity as the focus. Yeah, maybe you are right, but I just thought what the linguists say is that it is a relationship that it helps you to go from the language to the interpretation, right? And when they investigate something, they usually don't have external objects, but they just have so internal models of objects, right? And it helps you go choose a different one. So maybe you're right that it could be used here that, well, if you spontaneously create a file for the other object, then the focus will tell you to pick another file, and you only have two files, and that is already the file for the other object, and that would give you mutual exclusivity right away. Okay. Yeah.
That would okay. still be in the files framework. It would just the inference wouldn't depend on the constraint. But I think this
yeah.
would
okay.
way of caching it out would work as
yeah.
well.
But what was the question about
I'm just worried about what are the different ways we can characterize a scene in terms of giving files names that should provide individuating information and things that I called cargo
yeah.
or but we can like how do we decide that it's by jars that we are going to file in this task and not by monkey right
oh,
like
oh,
if we would
well,
file
okay.
by objects the I don't think that the same prediction follows because just because one object is in one jar another object can be in the same jar
yeah right that could be but the individuation the labels have nothing to do with individuation in my view. They are just conceptual links to conceptual knowledge. And what label the file gets depends on what is natural. So I don't know what the children call it. Would they call it a jar, a container, or whatever? But that is not the important thing. What individuates the file in relation to the object is that that object here, that the file is now made to track that object. But it could be tracked as a jar or as a container or as an unknown object or something. Okay.
So I had I had the same question as Gabo, but I didn't I think the so the question actually, can you go back to the design of the
furniture? Okay, yeah, I will go back to where?
To the design of the schematics of the vanish jar. Yes. So one question is whether why don't children use their mental files for the teddy and the car to
There's a mental files for teddy and car and for the jars.
Okay.
But I don't want to populate it too much.
Okay, then let me ask the second question. The second question is, why did you use these generic statements about the jars, that this jar is for Teddy and this jar is for the car? And do you think that makes a difference in what children infer, that is the possibilities that they exclude are based on that rather than...
Yeah, that's what one would should make it easier, that instead of having an identity between jars, you have an identity between the objects. Right? The microphone has gone, so you are helpless.
That's not what I meant. What I meant is when you say that this is for Teddy, You're describing the function of the jar.
Okay.
It's a generic statement.
The jar for Teddy.
Yes. Yeah. So, and then the second, the jar is for the car.
Yeah. Well, we put the car. Yeah. We put the car in here. Yeah. Okay.
So
you get the impression that things go into each has a jar it's put in. Okay. So that strengthens the impression that there are different jars, okay? And not only, but I thought the more important, stronger manipulation is that it seemingly comes out from a different part of the box.
Right, but if they assume that these are the places where these objects should be, then once they individuate the second jar as the jar in which the car is, then Teddy does not belong there.
Okay.
And the question was just whether you think this...
Okay, so
extra,
it's not
extra
just...
extra pragmatic information
okay.
may change children's inferences
yeah.
Okay. Over and beyond the files.
Thank you. If we do it again, we'll try to to take care of that. Yeah.
Okay, so when your adult subject solving this problem, this is how I imagine they do this. So they expect to find two jars there, and then they just find one, so that they realize that they had a mistaken belief, right?
Yeah.
On the basis of that, they try to repair it, so they go back and to figure out what else could have happened because you mislead them. What
right.
So you do. For that, they need source memory. They have to they have to figure out what made them believe that there are two jars there, right, in order to correct it.
Right, okay.
You need a source memory for that. So my question is, isn't that just possible that this is what causes difficulties for children, that the source memories are not available for them? And it's exactly the same kind of source memories that you have in the index file, in the identity statement. In order to figure out that these two jars are the same jars, you have to remember what made them believe that they are two different jars. So practically, this situation, if they don't remember the source, and we know that this is children episodic memory is not very good, then they would not be able to have these two attached files, right? So they would not be able to make the identity statement either.
So you're talking about identity statements or this here?
this here, I mean, I'm just trying to say that there.
You have to remember, yeah, but it's.
I just take them as statements. Of course, there was no such statement that one jar includes one of them. Although there was actually statements as well, and the other one is then. So, but if they don't remember the original sources that made them believe that there are two jars there, then they would not be able to merge them, right? So they would not be able to do the same. So it's actually completely analogous to your previous statements that why an identity statement is difficult for children.
Okay, so you say it's a source memory is at the heart of children's problems.
I'm offering it as a possibility. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But why would it correlate with false belief, the identity statements? Okay.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to ask you about the argument at the end with the mutual exclusivity and the Strawson's constraint. Could you go back to that
sure.
last slide?
Echo forward.
Yes. So can I ask you why the following isn't a better way of thinking about what's going on? They already have two object files because they can see that there's two distinct objects there. And then the WUG DAX stuff is about predicates that could go into the files. And from that perspective, mutual exclusivity is about whether you can put DAX and WUG in the same file. But that's not a thing about Strawson's constraint, right? Because it's not that we're wondering whether you can have.
No, the idea was that if I have focus, then I shouldn't give that information on an existing file.
Right, but...
But on the new file, so you deploy a new file. But then there is, of course, the alternative way.
Well, I was thinking they don't open a new file, the WUG file, as it were, because they already are seeing the two things. The question is about a predicate that can go into the file, if we like talking that way. So they're trying to figure out whether WUG goes in the file that they've already written DAX into or not. And then from that perspective, it's not really about Strawson's constraint, right? Because DAX and WUG could both go in the same file. That doesn't have any bearing on Strawson's constraint.
No, it's not. It's if you... say WUG makes you think of a different object. So you have to open a different file or pick out a different file than the one you have for the DAX. Okay? And then the question is which external object is the referent for the new file?
Sorry, I don't think I'm asking my question very well. Maybe a let somebody, because Hans has his thing.
So if WUG, of course WUG can go onto the, it could say it's, so in the blue case, you can put WUG on the file. That's no problem. That's what I actually wanted to say here. Okay. And then, of course, you won't get mutual exclusivity. Because you pick the same object as before, because that file is anchored to that object.
Sorry, I'm gonna hand the mic back. I don't think I'm explaining this question very well.
Yeah, we have a follow-up by Hans.
So there's a question I wanted to ask in any case, but it might actually also bear on this discussion, and that is whether you know of people having investigated as alternative instructions to you point at the WUG at the WAG, and you point at the WAG, the instructions you put at the other WAG and you put at the other WAG. For me, I mean, my expectation would be that if you tell the subject, you point at the other WAG, they will actually point at what you call the new representation, but I think it would work just as well, perhaps even better, if the subject already has a representation for the other object and not only the
dice. Mm-hmm.
And if I instruct you put at the other WAG, I don't know that that makes any sense at all, and I would be interested in what the children in the age ranges that you are talking about would say to that. I should qualify this question with, I don't know what the age is in general where children have a proper command of other, and perhaps that falls outside the age range of people you, of children you have investigated. But the question nevertheless would be interesting, I think.
Well, he has for the older investigated ones. The children. We just looked at the literature.
Okay.
So, just a very quick follow-up that I think children at this age do have a basic command of like another and similar articles, but I don't have a strong intuition about what would these cases be anaphoric in these scenarios where I feel like I kind of had a clear intuition with the focus version, but it's sort of unclear to me whether the given one is felicitous without.
But as far as you know, this hasn't yet been experimented.
This have not been experimented, but another I think they use pretty well, or at least understand.
A follow-up by Rory in the back.
Hi, thanks. This is a follow-up. Maybe it was asked. It's also maybe also a question for Gabor. But so in the study with the contrast, so what if the fox says, "This is a dax. Now I want you to pass me the dax." What happens? I imagine in this case the child doesn't go for the new object. So that would mean that they're still in the case where you have a de-emphasized WUG. There still is a role for something in addition to focus that would be explaining what's going on, and then at that point you could throw in something like with mental files. I don't know. Is this?
Yes, it's also a question for you, right?
Yeah. But I mean, this is a question about the empirical data, but also given the answer to that, what consequences for this? So it's also a question for him, but also for you. But it depends on the empirical data, which I don't know. There was two yesterday.
But you always put the emphasis on DAX.
Yes.
Yeah. So we don't have any condition where DAX was not emphasized. Or U is emphasized, right? Yeah. Too.
I think there is so much evidence on this because I think this is how people run their familiar word conditions in most of these studies. So, I mean, they might don't have this double focus of now you point to the whatever, but in generally speaking, they do things like, look, a dex. Now you point to the dex. Like something like this, we still focus on dex. And I think in the case, again, what you can see, this is more of a semantic effect insofar that the case is that dex cannot contrast with dex, right? Like that's not, that's, it has to find something else to contrast with in order to be felicitous. And I'm guessing what children do is that they converge on the other object because there's nothing else.
Sorry, it's not a follow-up. I just wanted to get on the queue. Is it my turn? Okay. Hi, thank you. I wanted to go, back to the vanished jar. And I was just, you know, I'm not a psychologist, I'm a philosopher, so I don't know about designing experiments, but I'm just surprised by the explanation that Strawson's constraint makes children believe in magic rather than the fact that children believe in magic explains why they don't come to the natural conclusion as easily as adults do about where the missing jar came from. So, you know, for example, I'm wondering if there's any experiments out there where, having nothing to do with two files, something disappears, and then there's like three possible ways it could locate. One is physically possible, two are physically impossible. Adults are going to figure out sort of the way it exited through the only physical possible way as identifying where the missing object went. And this is like very much armchair psychology, but I'm wondering if children would be at chance. Like, they might think it's one of the physically impossible routes, or they might think it came out through the physically possible route. And if that was the case, and I have no idea, maybe this has been disproven, if that were the case, it would seem like that could be an alternate explanation for what's happening here, in the sense that, you know, children seem very, you know, two-year-olds hide by covering their eyes and think you can't see them. So there's like a lot of ways in which they might think jars can magically appear at the back of the room as an equally good hypothesis as the jar came out the other side. Sorry, is that clear?
So you're saying that it is the children wanting to have magic?
Not just wanting that magic, just children don't know. I don't really mean that children believe in magic. I mean in the sense that, like, I would want, and again, this, I think this is an empirical hypothesis that I don't want to make from the armchair, that I'd want to see if there were tests,
okay,
but that children might not have as good a concept on the what's physically possible as adults do.
Okay.
Which is why adults go, yeah, so in the sense that there's an explanation that could have nothing to do with files, but the fact that adults are going to go to the only physically logical conclusion, and then it would take a lot for me to learn, you know, to think it's under the table, I'd have to also posit that there's like a trap door underneath the box or something like that, that somebody, right, which is possible, but like less likely. So as an adult, my immediate hypothesis is like the obvious one. But children just like don't have the reasoning to go through what is a more likely hypothesis than not in that scenario, right? The jar could have, to them, magically appeared on the other side, could have fallen through the bottom, who knows? But I'm wondering if that sort of experimental design could be replicated in a way that doesn't depend on two files, that just depends on whether children are gonna take like the physically most likely route given the laws of physics, or be sort of at chance between two impossible routes or two very unlikely routes, unless there's something very special about
So table. How does, how does your take explain why almost all children claim that it wasn't a distractor jar, because that's magic? Okay, then, but when the distractor jar, something else is in the distractor jar, then they don't do that.
Good, okay, that was,
Okay.
Right, excellent. That is very helpful. So that was the first thing I was thinking, right, I forgot about that second thing. Yeah, then the other stuff I was thinking is covered by things that people are asking about, setting up the containers as only containing one object. So that was like the other thing, I forgot that I was thinking that. So I'm wondering, again, I don't want to take up too much time, but also other ways to test the different hypotheses that I think could be going on. You know, containers normally are easily able to contain more than one object. So I'm wondering whether it's the fact that there's like a file label here that says, you know, teddy jar, car jar, which is sort of what you have, and then horse jar in the third manipulation, or the fact that somehow it's like the natural presupposition of the way it's been set up is that every jar is associated with a single object, right? So your first hypothesis is not that things have been doubled up, but that the jar must have disappeared, right? And if there was like a way to see if you could get the same thing when you've made it clear that jars can contain two objects, I'd wonder if you get the same.
So it's not Strawson's constraint, which drives them away from using that, but that the feeling that each jar should only have one object in it.
So
okay.
I, Sorry, yeah, I will let you answer. I just want to say I'm not trying to argue against it being Strawson's constraint.
No, no,
I'm just wondering whether there's sort of ways to rule out these other kinds of interpretations. Not that I think it should be.
No, that's very useful because reviewers who don't like this result will come up with something like that.
Exactly. Yeah, so again, this is not, I'm not trying to argue against it. I'm just trying to rule out what are different possible interpretations.
No, that's a thing I couldn't argue against this. That shouldn't be, Well, the containers came in because of the original idea of developing a identity test for animals, right? And so containers is nice because...
Can you speak into the microphone?
Nice in it.
Then the microphone.
Sorry, if the containers are useful, because if there is something nice in there, a grape, then the ape will track the container, and you have a good dependent measure on which container the ape will choose.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks. So if I understood this right, you're proposing that the right, appropriate interpretation of identity statements and success in false belief tasks rely on the same mechanism, right?
So the for the identity statements.
That identity statements and false belief rely on the same mechanism.
But here it doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah.
Right. Okay. So, can you explain? Can you explain the setup again, please?
The why there is a correlation between, belief tests.
Why does it not work? Yeah.
Well, the basic thing is let me put it. This is a good one, right? That the idea is that goes far beyond this data here is that children become able to deploy indexed files, which is necessary for representing different perspectives. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that goes up from 0% correct at 3, but plus minus half a year or so, and 5. So after 5, somewhere around 100%, but sometimes it goes down to 80% or so, but roughly at ceiling. That's how children should perform on any task that requires deployment of indexed files. Okay? So the theory then says you shouldn't get any of those data on the left side of that beam. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't have the ability to deploy an indexed file, they shouldn't be able to pass any of those tasks. Okay, and here is actually one example which sort of deviates, but you really have to look at lots of data, okay, to see whether that obeys. Because for a single study, you can always happen to pick very premature children, and then you get a larger proportion than you would get sort of in the normal case.
Right.
So that's the idea. Now, in the false belief test, you need the indexed file for representing the person's perspective. And for the identity task is necessary for understanding the identity statement. Because without having those indexed files, then you really get a sort of redundant Sousa's mother is Sousa's mother. Okay, so that's the explanation.
Right. My question was really about the experiment. Why the experiment? So you're saying the experiment provides a data point which is on the left of the line, as you were suggesting, might disprove.
Which the vanished jar?
Yeah.
No, that The hope was that here we would get, because no deep theoretical reasons, it was just that psychologists thought this, that you always must be able to show it earlier. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the idea was to have some a manipulation that doesn't need any language. Mm-hmm. In particular, no use of linguistic identity information, and then be able to show that children can use that identity information. And that was the attempt, and our attempt was the vanished jar, but it turns out to be actually more difficult.
Yep.
Right?
So yeah,
the.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Right. Okay. That makes perfect sense. Has anyone tested whether these, so the success in false belief task and success in interpreting identity statements, whether those were systematically related in children?
Yeah. They.
Right.
First of all, they go up within a narrow band, and they correlate.
In those within across individuals. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. We'll stop here. Thanks again, Joseph.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.